One of the very mysterious things about our faith is that God is unknowable, unapproachable. Can't know anything about Him. Everything you know about God, He's not that. It's kind of disconcerting. I mean, you say, you know, you believe in God? Yes, I believe in God. Can you tell me something about it? No, nothing. And for the first time, we really have a deciphering, if you will, of this terrific mystery that's existed in the past religions. What's the relationship to God? And this is so different from the past. I mean, all right, the Christians with their thoughts on the Trinity, but they can never quite figure it out. It's a mystery. Of course, it is a mystery. That's why it remains a mystery for them, too. Abdu'l-Bahá says there are three things. There is the divine bounty, there is the distribution of the bounty, and the recipient of the bounty. The Christ receives this Holy Spirit, which God reveals, and that's the Trinity. But to say the three are one is a bit confusing. It's the easiest way to cover the whole waterfront, I think. They just decided to lump it all together. Now, in Islam, because that of the extremes of Christianity, at least I understand that one of the motivations that Islam removed itself, Muhammad removed himself from any identification with God. You know, in the Kitab-i-Gan, Baha'u'llah says there's all these different stations within the manifestation. There's divinity itself. There's also servitude. And all of these titles apply at different times and according to the nature of the mode of revelation or words that they're revealing. But it's quite different to have Baha'u'llah coming and said, "Verily, verily, I am God and there is no God but me," and the challenge that represents. And if I could say the blessing that represents, compared to Muhammad coming and saying, "I heard from Gabriel the other day that God told him to tell me to tell you that you're supposed to do this and that." This is quite a distancing. Now Baha'u'llah comes and he says, okay, in the Gan, he said the manifestation can say, "I am God, verily I am God, and there is no God but me." But he says, actually it's the selflessness of the manifestation of God which allows him to pronounce in the first person of God to us. He says, it's not that his reality is the same as the reality of God. And yet he finds himself possessed of this power and vision and understanding of the human race that he can address mankind in the first person from God. And you have the essence of all of that in the hidden words that we shouldn't understand as coming from Baha'u'llah the man, but coming from Baha'u'llah the divinity behind the man, which is still a step down from the divine essence, the central orb of the universe that he describes. And he says, and you remember one of these quotes where he says, 10,000 prophets, each of Moses, are thunderstruck upon the Sinai of their search at God's forbidding voice, "Thou shalt never behold me." Whilst a myriad messengers, each as great as Jesus, stand dismayed upon their heavenly thrones by the interdictive mine essence, "Thou shalt never apprehend." The nature of our understanding of the manifestation of God, we're told, is not that we understand the manifestation of God. We understand the effect of the manifestation of God in our inner reality. In other words, our soul, to the limits of the soul's capacity or to the limits of the soul's growth, understands the manifestation of God, draws closer to the manifestation of God. And the manifestation of God, Baha'u'llah tells us, is the presence of God in our lives. And so our relationship with the manifestation of God becomes very important. But we have to understand it not at a personal level in the sense of like the personality of Baha'u'llah. Baha'u'llah says you can be against the personality of the manifestation and still accept his laws and teachings. But that wouldn't happen now because he's not alive. But if we saw him for some reason, you know, we didn't like his size or shape or something, that would be apart from how we might recognize the spirit coming from him and that constancy of his station, which is quite distinct from our station. We have awareness of our whole system, He has awareness of the whole system of creation. His consciousness is a God consciousness in that sense. So the manifestation says he can't reach back into the essence. He doesn't know the essence, but he sees the effects and operation of that essence in his own being, and it compels him to take action in the world, this world, and in the heavenly realms, because in each of the heavenly realms, we're told by the guardian that you can't approach the essence of God. You approach the manifestation of God. The inner reality of the manifestation, the personality of manifestation, remains the point of contact in all the worlds of God with God. Our relationship, we want to get it right as best we can. It's a very, very important thing. And it means that that in a sense, we center ourselves on the manifestation when we pray, particularly the obligatory prayers. We should be turning to the Qibla. We should be thinking of Baha'u'llah. Not the personality, again, the person of Baha'u'llah, but that light that shines from him and which he says, or which the guardian says, and God passes by, once relieved from the limits of physical reality around him, it shines ever brighter on us. It isn't as if we lost out. Actually, after the manifestation is passing, his presence, his omnipresence, is more potent than before, the implications of, as I read it, of what that means. So how do we walk in the presence of God? How do we read in the presence of God? How do we feel close to Baha'u'llah is one of the challenges that we have in order to fulfill our regular duties, both as members of families, as members of the human race in general, and as Baha'is. And that this theme becomes very important. He says we've been created to know and worship God, and he says that the knowledge of God is knowledge of the manifestation. And now, the manifestation has these three aspects that we have mentioned from some answered questions. Abdu'l-Bahá explains this as he has his own physical nature. But he says, okay, there's lots of physical things. The nature, physical nature of the manifestation, he says, can be equal to the state of the diamond in one of the tablets. Loi Suhur, he says. It's not published yet in English. Well, it is an old translation, but you can find it in Baha'i scriptures. Zuhur. Loi Suhur. He says it's like a diamond. It's just more sensitive in every sense. His physical being is the same atoms that we're made out of, but they become the vehicle for this divine spirit. And that, he says, in a way, is one of the mysteries of why the shrines are so potent, because the very physical remains of the manifestation that has an impact on people. Then he has a soul which is like ours, but he explains that it's a pre-existent soul, that the soul, that the manifestations are in the other world before they come here, and they have a time or are assigned a time when they appear in this world to carry out their mission. Now, it's very hard for us to understand the nature of that. Shoghi Effendi says we can't ever penetrate that. But they do have a continual reality. They're an internal reality. They're soul at the level of the soul. Everything else revolves around them. They're the sun, and the rest of us are like planets and satellites and so on. And finally, there is within that reality the divine effulgence of the spirit of the essence of God, which comes forth from them as the Holy Spirit, the faithful spirit, the divine spirit, translated in different ways. And the manifestation with that becomes, again, light-shedding and luminous, like the solar center itself, like the sun. The rest of us all receive our light from that one central orb. So people says, well, how can you worship a man like other men? You know, one of the publicists in Chile asked me that question one time, and I said, whoa, what am I going to answer? She's not a Baha'i. How is she going to understand? I said, well, in the physical creation, in our very solar system, we have bodies of different nature. We have planets and we have the sun. And look how the central role the sun plays in relation to all these other bodies and planets. Everything circles around it. Everything takes its life from it. The Baha'is believe that the manifestation of God that appears from age to age is like that sun. Everyone takes relationship to their maker and receives the light of faith through that manifestation. Baha'u'llah is the supreme manifestation of a half a million year period. We were told his dispensation, which is the mother dispensation of the Baha'i cycle, will last no less than 1,000 years. So you've got 850 to go at least, anyway. Still coming up. People say, what's going to happen next? I say, I'm complimented by the question, but I'm sorry, okay. yeah. Anyway, if you play your cards right, you'll be able to see from the other world what's happening. And Baha'u'llah offers a prayer that we, humanity, won't treat the next manifestation like we treated him. So the possibility of some difficulties is still there. And surely there'll be a terrific period of testing. And we don't know quite how the House of Justice plays into all of that at the time, you know. The House of Justice said he is the manifestation. Everything's fine. The House of Justice says he's not the manifestation, and the manifestation says that's not the House of Justice anymore. So those are problems for those times. We won't get into those. Okay. Now, one of the things that Shoghi Effendi, when he defines in God Passes By, he defines God, he said the existence and oneness of a personal God, unknowable, inaccessible, the source of all revelation, eternal, omniscient, omnipresent, and almighty. Very interesting to take this. You'll find this on page 139 of God Passes By. This is the Baha'i definition of God in the most succinct form that I've seen it in the right. So somebody writes, we can't know him. How is he personal? Shoghi Effendi writes, he says, what is meant by personal God is a God who is conscious of his creation, who has a mind, a will, a purpose, and not, as many scientists and materialists believe, an unconscious and determined force operating in the universe. Such a conception of the divine being as the supreme and ever-present reality of the world is not anthropomorphic, for it transcends all human limitations and forms, and does by no means attempt to define the essence of divinity, which is obviously beyond any human comprehension. To say that God is a personal reality does not mean that he has a physical form, or does in any way resemble a human being. To entertain such a belief would be sheer blasphemy. So we have it. We have a clear statement here and also in the dispensation of Baha'u'llah, Shoghi Effendi's letter, that don't confuse the manifestation of God with God. Even when he says, I am God, you have to understand what that means. Now, beyond that, the test that may be to people approaching the faith, or even to ourselves, because we say, well, how do we explain this? There is the wonder of it, and that is that this is the day of God, the day of God himself. He came, he sent his messengers, they were destroyed, he finally comes himself. The Lord of the vineyard comes to straighten the whole thing out. The great announcement appears. The all-merciful Rahman himself comes amongst mankind and delivers his message. As we see the transformation of the human race, this is going to be celebrated rather than be a problem. It's going to be something that people get very excited about. We're living in the day of God. We're living in the greatest appearance or manifestation of God that's ever happened in recorded religious history, from Adam until now. And we have somehow popped into existence at such a glorious moment. And we are privileged to serve that. And Abdu'l-Bahá says the holy ones of the past want to come back to this world that they might perform some service in the pathway of Baha'u'llah. And friends, we have our whole lives to give here. And we are the envy of the other world because of it. This is a very exciting prospect. Also, the idea that through this revelation, the whole world is going to reflect eventually the splendors of the Abha kingdom, of the divine kingdom, from pole to pole. We're going to see such a transformation in the future. If we do everything right that we're supposed to do, we can see it sooner. If we don't, we'll be replaced by something else, somebody else, more pebbles or whatever. Now, such a time, just one interesting sidelight here. Abdu'l-Bahá revealed a tablet in 1912 to one of the friends, talking about the greatness of this day, unparalleled greatness of the day of Baha'u'llah. And he said, you will see terrific developments, discoveries, and so on. And he says, ere long, the time will come when anyone on the face of the earth will be able to speak face to face with anyone else at any moment that they wish. It's in my pocket, actually. It's got a camera on both sides. But at the time that was revealed, the friends said, we better not talk about this. You know, people are going to say, how can you get everybody together or apart? Or it just doesn't, you can't figure it out. But then he goes on, he says, why is this? He said, this is because of this greatness of Baha'u'llah's revelation. This world has to be tucked under, it has to draw close to the realities of the other world more than at any period in the past. Now, certain characteristics of the other world, one of the things is that we imagine or has been dreamt about is this question of immediate communication. The other is flying. And it's not long after Abdu'l-Bahá said that the human race began to fly around. And now we're all flying all over the world. It's not the same as the flying in the other world, but it is a reflection of that in this world to the degree that it's possible here. And Mr. Olinga said when he was in the presence of Shoghi Effendi, he told me this himself, he said, Shoghi Effendi said, in the future, all travel will be aerial, even individual travel. Now you can wonder about that if you like. Those of us who are able to carry the big tanks on our back and all that, how that will be, we don't know. Anyway, another thing that's arresting that sense is immediate knowledge. And that's something that we dream about. Now, you have seen in the Lohe Hekmat, the Tablet of Wisdom of Baha'u'llah, he says that whenever he needs to refer to the writings of the past or anything like that, he sees them on tablets before his sight and can quote from them or paraphrase them, which he does paraphrase actually in that Tablet of Wisdom from the philosophers of the past. And Abdu'l-Bahá, we have an apocryphal story from Abdu'l-Bahá visiting in Schenectady, New York, the General Electric Laboratories. The friends took him up state New York and he visited there, and that was the center of the great electrical scientist Steinmetz. And Abdu'l-Bahá and his entourage with the robes and everything had come in with some of the American friends, and Steinmetz, I don't know how he would have responded to see this venerable figure, but anyway, he was courteous, and he tried to explain in simple terms what they were doing there. They'd been working to combine this with that to produce something which was so important for the future of electricity. They translated that to Abdu'l-Bahá, and Abdu'l-Bahá smiled, and he said, tell him that if he matches the this with that, he'll solve his problem. And they repeat this to him, and now Steinmetz is following behind Abdu'l-Bahá. So asking their friends, who is this? But this has solved the greatest mystery of my life. And they're all excited. So they come outside afterwards, and the friends are gathered around the master, and they said, Abdu'l-Bahá, do you know everything? And he says, no, but whatever I need to know, I see on tablets before my vision, before my sight. Okay. They've all got their mouths open. So he adds to that phrase, he says, and this power is accessible to each one of you. It requires a certain purity and sanctity of soul, a few other prerequisites which are not easily accessible, but they're there. Never mind. Now we have Wikipedia. Now we have the counterpart of that celestial condition, in the form of small tablets before our eyes, which we can bring up the knowledge of practically anything we want. Amazing. What other wonders we will see, I don't know. All this miniaturization of everything and making it accessible to us, all so interesting. All because it's the day of God. It's the great day of God. And it's such a great day that the writings tell us Baha'u'llah will overshadow spiritually the prophets of God for the next 500,000 years. Now, you know, much of the Bab's revelation is dedicated to revelation, which is interpretive revelation of Quranic verses or Quranic surahs, chapters of the, where he elaborates and shows what's hidden in these these suras. Brings out much more than you could see, ever see. Terrific thing. And somehow one feels that the future manifestations will be involved with the verses of Baha'u'llah, will be showing us the wonders of that. Besides whatever else they'll bring, they're independent in their day. They can abrogate, he says, the laws, Shoghi Effendi explains, the laws of the Akhtas, introduce new laws. In others, he can adapt the machinery of world order to the growing necessities of the human race. And Shoghi Effendi, and again, this is a pilgrim note, he said, there are powers and capacities latent in human beings which are not even dreamt of yet. Now, people will tell you how much of your brain you're using, and whether you're using that much or not, I don't know. But in any case, that is something for the future to see how these powers will come out under the influence of the kind of things we spoke about in the first session. Human beings concentrating on the verses of God, replacing their own limited consciousness with an ever broader vision of what a human being can be and what humanity has to become. Such an exciting prospect we have before us. The manifestation is the will of God amongst us. He talks about this, and it's in the book too there, about what's called the primal will, an all-pervasive will that he has. We can reflect ourselves, I'm sure, on how the manifestation is so different from us. Just by the fact that when you pray in your chamber and are close with Baha'u'llah, it doesn't keep him from attending to someone in China or someone in Australia. In fact, to millions of people praying to him at the same time, addressing their needs, confirming that. It's something we can't even imagine, that kind of capacity, because we have no way to compare it with anything. But omniscient and omnipresent God through Baha'u'llah in our lives. If we're missing something, it's not his fault. The bounty of God is eternal. It's flowing with a terrific force. We have to sometime tune ourselves in. We've got our radios, you know, off beam or something. We're maybe watching, I don't know, we're watching MTV or I don't know what we are. We have to focus. You can watch that sometimes, but have to focus back to the reality of this. And he said the greatest means for the growth of spirituality, Shoghi Effendi, and Tablets of Baha'u'llah, he says, is the use of the obligatory prayers and fasting. And strangely enough, he says, these are the greatest deeds of the tree of life, of a man's life. Obligatory prayers and fasting. We always think of deeds as doing something for somebody else. But the worship of God, the proper worship of God, is the greatest act that emanates from a human being. And right close to that is the act of awakening another soul to that purpose. So teaching becomes closely aligned with that also, and is the means of attracting the mysteries of the kingdom to the mirror of the heart, Abdu'l-Bahá says. As you teach, your focus is to try to touch that inner reality of another human being in a way. This is quite different from passing out pamphlets. He says, breathes life into the souls of men. And in order to do that, he says, very simply in the Tablets of the Divine Plan, become incarnate light. The requirements are not simple. The rewards are inestimable. How can we face these things? To kind of revisit this in a letter of Shoghi Effendi, written in 1951, he says, as regards your question, Baha'u'llah is, of course, not God and not the Creator. But through him we can know God. And because of this position of divine intermediary, in a sense, he is all of the other prophets we can ever know of. It's all and or the other prophets that we can ever know of that infinite essence which is God, is through the manifestation. Therefore, we address ourselves in prayer and thought to him and through him to that infinite essence behind and beyond him. In another letter, he says, after all, it's not his personality, but what's flowing through him that eventually we wed ourselves to and attach ourselves to, the light that's shining from him. The Baha of Baha'u'llah, light, glory, splendor. Interesting, some of you may have seen the writings of the Bab that have been summarized in Nader Saidi's new book, on the gate of the heart. And in it, he talks about modes of revelation. This kind of fits in with the same topic. He says that in Islam, one of the imams had identified four modes of revelation. And he said, I reveal verses in these four modes and also in a fifth mode. And then he explains what the different modes are. He says the first one is the divine verses. And these in Islam would be the divine verses themselves and also the hadith-e ilahi, the divine hadith, the divine traditions. And these are always the voice of divinity itself, and you'll find these in different religions. And this second, he said, it comes from the inner reality, that identical inner reality of all the manifestations of God. They speak the divine word of God. The second one is the second mode of revelation is from the individual reality of the manifestation. The inner reality manifests himself as an outer reality with the limitations that a human being has living in this world. And he models for us how to worship his inner being. So he reveals prayers. And those prayers are the praise wherewith God praises his own self. And they become the very means of our understanding, that we could never make up prayers, really, that are sufficiently potent. God hears the prayers, hears our supplications, but how we can travel on the wings of these divinely revealed prayers is something that we need to learn and use. He also represents the station of servitude. His outer being is in service to his inner being. Or, again, the outer manifestation of God is serving God, so to speak, which is, in this case, as we know, is the inner reality, that universal primal will, which is the first thing that emanates from the divinity and is the nature, that simultaneous nature of all the manifestations of God, not only appearing here, but from the hints and allusions that we have, appearing in all of the worlds of God and all of the physical planets where creatures exist that need divine messengers. This is a system that's universal. He says it's relative. He tells us about this planet, but he also talks about these divine messengers as being countless in numbers. And what's countless in numbers are the creatures in other planets and the manifestations that appear to them. Always there's guidance. Never have we left humanity or the human rational soul bereft of guidance. And it always needs this light of some central luminous orb. So that's the inner reality appears in the outside world. Then the third level he calls commentaries. These are commentaries on the first level. In other words, one of the modes of revelation is when the manifestation talks about the meaning of these divine words that he's revealed. And the fourth one is other discourses and explanations. And these are related to some interesting phrases. The first one is related to the phrase when the manifestation says, I am God, the voice of divinity. The second level of prayers and servitude, thou art God. The third one, he is God. And the fourth one, he is God who does this and does that, and further explanations that you have. So the Bab says all of his revelation he's revealed in these four. Now he said, I've added a fifth one, which is all these previous four, but now not in Arabic, but in the Persian language as well. So he says that the Farsi verses are the fifth mode of revelation, of his revelations. Now, Baha'u'llah in the tablet Surah Heykal, he affirms, he said, that the modes of revelation are numerous. He said, I have myself revealed in 9 modes of revelation. And in another place, he said, all these 9 modes are present in the Heykal. So it's not just the discrete Heykal, where he describes his credentials, so to speak, but in the rest of the tablets of the kings that he attaches to those in the fuller Heykal, the composite Heykal, where he, after establishing his credentials, commands the Pope and the kings what they need to do on behalf of. He's come as the messenger of God, and here's what you're required to do. Well, you've read some of the histories of the responses of those leaders to it and the consequences. And we don't know what the nine modes of revelation are. Baha'u'llah, in existing tablets that we have, we don't have anything that tells us what the nine are. But he also says that he could reveal in countless other modes of revelation, if needs be. And in some of the places he says, sometimes I've spoken in the voice of a lawgiver, sometimes I've spoken as a mystic knower, as a lover. There's various references in the writings that the character of the verses that come out of the manifestation, what character do they have? So this is an important explanation. In the memoirs of Haji Mirza Haider Ali, he mentions the Lohe No Soud, the tablet of the nine modes. He said he's seen, but none of the rest of us have yet found it, so we don't know where it went to Sudan and stayed there or what happened to it. So this is, maybe we'll discover that mystery sometime. Meanwhile, Shoghi Effendi, at the end of one of the tablets, one of the chapters of God Passes By, he said that Baha'u'llah, he has a whole line of at least nine, where he talks about Baha'u'llah revealed laws and teachings and principles and commentaries and homilies and meditations and so on. So you've got a suggested list already there of nine modes of revelation of the manifestation. The supreme manifestation, the supreme outpouring of divine verses in the recorded history of mankind. The verses of Baha'u'llah are greater than the combined verses of all the previous manifestations, including the Bab. We have tablets with 5 million discrete words of the Bab, and we have 6 million of Baha'u'llah. So it's just an immensity. Nobody can really read it all, even. And then, thank goodness, we have computers now to help gather parallel themes and subject matter and topics as the House of Justice needs it for its consideration and its deliberations and for deciding what to add to the knowledge that we have. Fortunately, it seems like the character of divine revelation is such that it's holographic, that if you penetrate one hidden word, you've really penetrated all of the hidden words. Abdu'l-Bahá says that. He says, if you can live up to one hidden word, you will have lived up to all of the hidden words. He doesn't tell us what living up means, but obviously that's a very inclusive thing when you look at all the hidden words. The question of the friends being in the presence of Baha'u'llah, witnessing his reality, is something that our generation doesn't have, but is a beautiful thing. And there are stories, one of which is here someplace, just a second, see if I can find it. This is, again, this is part of the memoirs of the same Haji Mirza Haider Ali, who was in exile in Sudan and suffered so much and was brought to the presence of Baha'u'llah eventually. And he has written down the following brief account of one of his memorable visits with Baha'u'llah. He says, when permission was granted and the curtain was withdrawn, I entered the room where the King of Kings and the ruler of this world and the next, nay, rather, the ruler of all the worlds of God, was with great authority seated on his couch. The verses of God were being revealed, and the words streamed forth in a copious rain. Methought the door, the wall, the carpet, the ceiling, the floor, and the air were all perfumed and illumined. They all had been transformed, each and every one, into ears, and were filled with a spirit of joy and ecstasy. Each object had become refreshed and was pulsating with life. To which worlds I was transported and in what state I was, no one who has not experienced such as this can ever know. Well, we have a number of those things, you know. The Varga boys, the brother of Ruhollah, was in the Holy Land at the same time with Ruhollah and their father, who eventually was martyred as well. And he noticed that when Baha'u'llah was going to reveal verses, he sent the friends away. He dismissed them. He thanked them and dismissed them. And then he'd go and he'd... So they said, why does he do that? And he said, because that's when he's revealing the words of God. Out of deference and kindness to the friends, he would excuse them. He said, but I want to go sometime when the revelation is being revealed. And he asked the family if he could be present sometime. And so a couple weeks passed, and eventually at the mansion they called him upstairs to come to the room of Baha'u'llah. And they said, Baha'u'llah has called you. You can go in. So he parts the curtain, he steps in. I think he's about 11 years old, something like that. And he said, as he tells the story, as soon as I got in the room, I felt my knees weaken and I was dropping to the floor, fainting. And Baha'u'llah was chanting something, and he stopped his chanting and he said, Hoda Hafez. Goodbye. And he said, I fell down, passed out, and the family knew what was going to happen. They reached under the curtain and pulled me out. Went someplace and put water on his face. Well, there are a few stories like that. You realize what an impact this had. Another man said he came up the mansion stairs one time, and Baha'u'llah was seated in the center of the mansion. And Al-Ghazal was taking notes, and Baha'u'llah was chanting. And he said, as I came out, I was frozen on the spot. I couldn't go forward. I couldn't go back. I couldn't decide anything. I was just overwhelmed. Finally, Baha'u'llah nodded, and I was able to back out and go downstairs. So this is a courtesy, the force and potency, again, of revelation. So something just so that we get the idea, this is not ordinary words. These verses are potent. Again, they're crystallizations of things from the other world. And we have the endowment of the human spirit to be able to meditate and penetrate into these if we have the right attitude and preparation to see them. And then our whole lives become sweetened and changed and transformed from whatever we may be suffering along the way. You know, each of us is different from everybody else. You know the question of, like, every fingerprint is different. Every leaf of every tree is distinct. This is in conformity with the manifestation of the name of God, the unique, the one. And so that name also comes within human experience, because we are all a combination of all, potentially, of all the names of God that exist. So one of the names of God is the unique, which marks each one of us as being quite unique and distinct. And Abdu'l-Bahá was asked and answered in the tablet that he wrote as a teenager to one of the, at the request of Baha'u'llah, to one of the Sufi leaders, why the different great philosophers, renowned holy philosophers, spoke in such a distinct manner about God, the essence, or whatever they said. First of all, of course, they couldn't penetrate it completely, but the things they said seemed to be at variance with each other. And Abdu'l-Bahá explains, he says that is due to the dominant name of God within their character, of each of them. Now, this plays out in our own lives. Again, this is my own understanding. We don't have it written quite this way. But if you said that our human reality was like a pie, and it had divided all the names of attributes of God, some of those portions of the pie are larger in some of us than others, or have different divine names. Ryokanum once wrote a play called The Growing Pains of a Spiritual Assembly. And I can't remember the exact name, but the people on the assembly were Mr. Justice and Mrs. Mercy and Mr. Wisdom. Whatever subject comes up, Mrs. Mercy would say, don't you think we should be merciful in this case? Like, God is the essence of mercy and this requirement. And the other one says, it's about time we be just and fair. You can't have people doing bad things and not suffer the consequences. That's Mr. Justice. And then Mr. Wisdom says, it says in the writings, you know, this and that. And anyway, a combination of nine distinct, because the combination of divine names, according to this name, the unique one, has to be distinct in each of us. That would mean that we would have a different point of view from nine other people on the assembly or eight other people on the assembly. And somehow that nine is sufficient to help God balance the whole thing out and come up with the kind of guidance and answer that we need at the local assembly level if we're all sincere and devoted and not competing too much with each other. That means that under the influence of the revelation, and this is interestingly confirmed in a tablet on life after the soul after death. It's quoted in the Gleanings. It's one of the things that people will wish to do when they go to the other world is to witness the reality of every illumined soul. Now, the manifestation of God comes. Obviously, he's got all these names and attributes. It's overwhelming from what we hear. It's just totally overwhelming. But we meet from time to time in our life Baha'is, and sometimes very humble Baha'is, who one of the divine names or a group of the divine names is shining them in such a sense that it takes us back. Their eyes are shining in a way that gives us another hope for existence. And the other world, the great souls, the great the detached souls who have their mirrors totally reflected, turned to the divinity, they will be there, and the approach and encounter with each of these souls will open to us new understandings of these divine names. Now, we have the job to play out that display of divine names. That's our code, so to speak. That's our inner reality. If we don't play that role, that particular set of divine names will never be displayed for eternity. If you don't become who you're supposed to become and don't make your contribution to the world order of Baha'u'llah, it will be deprived of that forever. And that's not because you're something special, but the code that he put in you, the divine names, that set of divine names which give you your particular potential to offer yourselves to mankind, to sacrifice yourselves and become that kind of a being that you need to become, are unique. So I hope all of you will strive to the fulfillment of your full potentiality and live in this presence of Baha'u'llah through that. Because those names and attributes stream from his reality, and that's what gets reflected. He's the primary mirror, and we're the secondary mirrors and other characters in creation. To return to your forces compilation here, you've came to that part, I think, from God Passes By, where it says that the influence of Baha'u'llah's soul no longer circumscribed by any physical limitations, its radiance no longer beclouded by its human temple, that soul could henceforth energize the whole world to a degree unapproached at any stage in the course of its existence on this planet. Okay? I mentioned that earlier. It's interesting to know. We're not, you know, Johnny come lately. We're right in the, where we, for our souls, he's put us right in the perfect time with that set of potentialities that we have. We just have to strive to attain them, to manifest them. I've had some of these quotes on these, on the effect of the disruptive forces associated with this world-shaking ordeal that humanity is going through, because having resisted the initial impulse of the manifestation, his call for the most great peace in his own lifetime to the world leaders, one of the things that Baha'u'llah said is we've seized these powers from kings and ecclesiastics, and they've been passed to the people. Now, you're beginning to see how a generation like the Tunisians and the Egyptians, the young people, have suddenly come forth demanding their rights. But the earlier generation never thought to do that. You know, we'll just be killed or something. But there, as a force, there are areas in humanity which are pushing this project forward. And the consciousness of the oneness of mankind is gradually growing in the human race. Now, a lot of us here are older, 40, 50 years of life here. You know how much humanity has changed, how much the attitude towards ethnic differences has dissolved, how the young people in the world identify with each other, how certain forces which you wouldn't imagine would be the cause of this are producing it. Never mind the internet, which is a terrific, powerful force, and Twitter and tweeting, but the whole movement of sports in the world, the competition between sportsmen and sportswomen of all the different nations in the Olympics and everything, how this creates the impression of the oneness of humanity, that we're all one people on this planet. How music and the influence of some of it, not the most spiritual quality, but how it prevails in the human race, how we're moving towards a universal language of English as a second, at least as presently, as a second kind of universal language, which people that don't know each other's languages, they communicate on the internet through broken English or whatever, some kind of computer English or something different. That thing is moving forward also. You see how Baha'u'llah is creating a disposition of to humanity to recognize in the principles of his faith the way out and the solution to the chaos that we're facing. And it will become increasingly obvious. We, in the meanwhile, need to trace through the teachings and see how they apply to the human race. And Baha'u'llah especially said to the young people, study the writings carefully and examine the solutions that Baha'u'llah has brought for the different vexing problems that humanity faces. And when you start thinking of a career, my own suggestion would be you look at the writings and see what kind of things are in the writings. For instance, maybe two generations ago, nobody would have thought of dedicating their lives to the advancement of sources of pure water. Yet how important that's becoming. Sources of water, never mind pure water, just water in so many places, and then the purification of water. Baha'u'llah has this verse in the Akdas, he says that every place should be provided with pure water, and the water shouldn't be changed by flavor or by color or by taste. Oh, but there's a third one, I'm confusing flavor with taste. Anyway, you go look up the verse. I don't have to tell you what that is. Water is a very important thing. Now all kinds of careers are coming out of that. If you want to have a career to try to find the missing link in evolution, forget about it. Baha'u'llah says, Abdu'l-Bahá says, no, you're never going to find it. So why make a career out of it, you know? There's certain things you want to identify with in the health recommendations that are in the Baha'i writings would give you some hints about which direction to go with health services and understanding how healing can take place in the human reality. So many things of that sort. You may have some questions. We're going to have a chance that you can ask questions that you'd like along the way later on. For the time being, I'm escaping from that. And thank you very much.